Wait a minute, what am I doing? Two men in a what? Two friends from film school, one who graduated, one who did, and they decided to make a podcast. Okay, this has never been done before, right? Okay. This is Matthew and Harrison's Two Men in a Movie. It's not what it sounds like.
Chicagoan? I don't like Chicago.
Chicagoanite?
A breezy boy. There's a breezy boy in the Vatican City, which, you know, whatever, I'm fine with that. But he's going to show up to Rome and be like, hey, yo, Chicago, I could use a slice of za. And they're like, here you go, your holiness. He's like, nah, he's going to pull out a deep dish pizza in the middle. Like, I think, like, you know how, like, in the Book of Revelations, it's like the Antichrist goes into the rebuilt Second Temple and proclaims himself God, bringing by the end of the world?
Sure.
I think it's when the Pope pulls out a deep dish pizza in the Vatican.
But hasn't he spent, like, the last 20-ish years of his life, like, in Peru? Like, I know he's a U.S. citizen and
yeah,
from
but
Chicago.
He's like genetically deposed to.
Sure, but I don't think he's gonna come out, like, singing about Da Bears and whipping out deep dish pizzas.
I feel like when he was down in Peru, I know nothing about this man, but I feel like when he was down in Peru, he would alternate between llamas and soccer. Alpacas, they have alpacas, a lot of alpacas. Alpacas and soccer to the Cubs in deep dish. Like, he did the Drew Carey thing where he'd get, like, frozen deep dish pizza sent to Peru. He's like, you know, I love it down here, but the one thing they don't got, good pizza. They don't got no good pizza down here. I gotta get shipped in on Catholic airmail. That's an angel. It's Gabriel bring down.
Like manna from the heavens, but yeah, it's just like, into Chicago deep dish pizza from like Luigi's or some shit.
And he's like, nah, now I can preach. I'm gonna turn this shit into the fucking body of Christ. Bam!
I mean, yeah, he can.
I don't think there's a limit. I don't think it has to be wafers.
No, is it just any bread?
I think it can be, because I know in emergencies, anyone can do it.
Define emergencies.
Like a Catholic's about to die, you're in the mountains, your plane crashed, and they need to take their last communion.
Okay.
Like the church says, you can do that. Like, God will let you do that.
God will give you the magic powers for the single moment.
God is like, yo, this guy ain't going to hell just because there ain't a priest around. Bam, Holy Spirit. Yeah, 100% God will allow you to perform that miracle if it's an absolute necessity. It's like how I think technically anyone can bless holy water, too. They're not supposed to, but you can in an emergency, I think.
So, okay. So, what I understand about holy water is that it needs to be 51% holy water for all of it to be holy water.
Yeah, once you take 49% of a gallon of water and then put 51% of that gallon of water in, and that's holy water, it's all holy water.
Okay.
That's why people buy holy water blessed by the Pope.
I was going to say, so it's just a constant regeneration of holy water?
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of signs in the Catholic Church people don't know about. Holy water transference, emergency miracles. Long history of consent with Gabriel. That's not science, but that's like social science.
Sure.
I had a big argument with my mom. She's like, forcing a baby on Mary. I'm like, Mary literally like was asked.
Yes.
Say what he will about God. She's like, what if he was like an alien? He still asked, Mom.
As someone who has read the Magnificent, like, that is a woman so defined in her faith.
Yeah.
That, like, first off, the whole thing about Mary is that we actually don't know her age. We have, like, ideas, but we don't actually know her age. She was probably between the ages of 17 to 21.
Yeah.
People want to say 13. It wasn't.
Yeah,
historically, she was between 17 and 21.
Joseph was like a man.
Yeah. And while that is young, it is not a... I mean, 17 is a child.
Yeah.
17 is a child.
But specifically at that time, too.
Yes.
I was like, that's an appropriate age to have a child of that age.
Yes.
And like, yeah, he fucking came down and asked. She was cool with it. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you had to be a virgin. Like, I mean, I think people often take it as purity. But I think truly the reason why you keep calling her the Virgin Mary is because it's not as impressive if you say the woman who fucks a lot and had the Son of God. Like, it's immaculate conception is incredible because there's never been any rope inside her, you know?
Sure.
That's the miracle of it.
Sure.
If she's fucking Joseph and a baby comes out, I mean, what's that?
It's the, yeah, purity and miracle. It's the reason why, like, other, like, I'm going to use the word myth, but I don't mean it like wooey. Yeah. I just mean, like, myth as in religious story. Yeah. It's why, like, other myths across all cultures also have, like, virgin births, not just, like, Christian or Catholicism. Yeah. Like, it's
like,
in other.
Like, fuck.
Yeah.
Just like our new fucking Pope.
Does he fuck?
He's from fucking Chicago.
I'm saying he has fucked.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is currently, not like the second, but from now on, is he fucking?
I mean, they're never going to come out and say it, but like his first speech, he's going to have some like trashy Chicago broads next to him. And you know he's given them the Holy Sacrament. Welcome to the Two Men in a Movie podcast, where each week one man shows another man a movie he can't believe he hasn't seen. As always, I'm your Pope fucking supporter. I don't fuck popes. I support that they fuck. With the hat on.
Oh, 100. The hat stays on.
The hat has to stay. If you're fucking the Pope, the hat has to stay on. If you take it off, I'm no longer fucking the Pope. I'm fucking like Greg.
Yeah, I'm fucking.
Sorry. I actually know this one's name.
Bob.
Francis.
What?
His real name's Francis.
I thought it was Robert.
I thought it was Francis.
No, he was ordained as cardinal by Francis, but I want to say he's Robert Prevost.
Bobby!
Yeah, my friend keeps calling it. I know. My friend keeps calling him the cardinal formerly known as Bob.
Big Papa Bobby. Big Papa Bobby in the Vatican over here. Joined as always by my up-to-date on Pope names co-host and work husband, Harrison Poole. How are you doing? What was the last Pope's real name?
Jorge.
See?
I know none of the other ones. I don't know Benedict's. I don't know John Paul's. I mean, I think those were the only popes of my lifetime.
Was John Paul in her lifetime?
Almost certainly. Because Benedict was only like 8 years before he... Yeah, till 2005.
Huh.
Yeah, like well within our lifetime. Shit.
That's wild.
So do you think on some level Bobby... took the name Leo the 14th. Like, he took, like, a 14th because he is the first U.S. citizen pope, but he wanted to, like, show that he was from a long tradition. Like, do you think there was some symbolism there?
I think he chose it because he went, oh, Leo, that's like a lion. Fucking love the Cubs. That's what I fucking think happened.
I need that to be true. I need to ask. Listen. The cardinal formerly known as Bob. Please come on our podcast. I don't know if popes are allowed on podcasts, but like,
who's gonna stop them? Who can tell them no? Well, like, God's gonna fucking personally come down and be like, oh, I'm your boss. No, he's the only one that can tell the Pope what to do. If the Pope says popes are allowed to go on podcasts, sorry, baby, that's dogma. God supports it now.
So, you know what? Please come on our podcast, Bobby.
Jesus did not consider the implications of as it is on earth, so shall it be in heaven.
I have some questions. I want to know why Leo. That's the first one.
I want you to come on the podcast and say God's 10 feet tall. Because I want God to tell me to be like, whoa, I'm defined.
I want you to come on the podcast and tell me who has better pizza, Chicago or the literal Italians.
I think I've said this before. My take on Chicago pizza, it's okay. It's fine warm. It's as good as any other pizza warm. Next day, thick crust, thick, solid fucking cheese, a little sauce. That bitch is a breakfast dessert.
Mm-hmm.
So I ate it. I'm like, all right, this is okay. The next day I ate it. I'm like, holy fuck.
Rentham House of Pizza in Norton, Massachusetts, right outside Boston, has some of, if not the best pizza I've ever had, ever.
Really?
I have not been to New York and I have not been to New Jersey.
The best Reuben I've ever had was in Maryland.
Okay.
Because two Cleveland Jewish brothers formed a restaurant there. They did not open a restaurant in Cleveland, which I'm angry about, because that was a fantastic fucking restaurant. I was sitting there eating my fucking Reuben, eating black and white cookies, watching women's softball.
Hell,
that's a fucking dream,
dude. They had this wood burning stove that hadn't been changed in 70 years, hadn't really been that cleaned super well, and so it had the ashes of ancestors in that crust.
The ghost of other pizzas going inside.
So I was with my parents and my brother visiting my mom's side of the family. And the entire week we were there, she kept saying over and over and over again, we're going to stop and rent them House of Pizza. We're going to stop and rent them House of Pizza. And my brother and I, the whole time, are like, we think this pizza is going to be good, but we think
it's not going to live up.
Yeah. We think nostalgia is blinding her. And then we had it and we're like, you did not lead us astray, mother. I'm so sorry we ever doubted you.
Was surprisingly good pizza that I miss? Pizza Fire.
Ooh, mm-hmm.
I miss pizza. It sucks about the tax fraud. But that was a fun restaurant.
So the movie?
You brought it.
I know. I was just the movie this week is Quentin Tarantino presents The Man with the Iron Fists, directed and co-written by RZA from the Wu-Tang Clan.
I want to say this is a movie I really like, despite it. It's not much.
Correct.
It's such a nothing burger. I feel like Mortal Kombat has more meat on its bones, but I really like this movie. Like a quarter of this movie is I want to call him Kurt Russell, but that's not his name. Russell Crowe is yes. Russell Crowe, touching the ass of Asian prostitutes. That's a good quarter of this movie, I feel like.
So the original cut of this movie was 4 hours long.
That makes a lot of sense.
And RZA desperately wanted it to do a Kill Bill and split it up into two movies.
He probably should have.
And Eli Roth, the co-writer essentially was essentially nah, make a 90-minute movie.
That makes sense now, because I was looking at we're two-thirds of the movie and we just got to Iron Hands.
Yes.
There's very little Iron Hands in this movie.
He doesn't lose his hands until 47 minutes into this movie. It's so much later than I thought. My guess, it's an hour and a half into the four-hour cut.
I do like that I'm learning more about China through these movies.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that China had so many superheroes.
Historically. Speaking. Yes, historically, absolutely. I think why I picked this movie, in addition to it coming up in the Big Trouble in Little China episode, is that it feels like a person who loves movies who doesn't know how to make a movie.
100%. 100%, that's exactly what it feels like.
There are some slow-mo camera shots and just random camera movements that make zero sense that are only there because RZA was like, this looks cool.
It feels like a movie made by a 13-year-old who says, this is cool. He's like, there's a guy and he has a really cool knife. What do we call him? Mr. Knife.
Jack Knife.
Jack Knife. I'm Mr. Knife! Cool, what's this guy? He his body turns into metal. Bronze body.
So we have Gold Lion. Who's his successor? Silver Lion. And his partner, Bronze Lion.
Hey, what about his son? That's X-Knife. No relation.
It's like Jet Yi or some shit. It rules.
But everyone has these 13-year-old fucking around playground.
This is a person you can tell this was written by a person and directed, who has deep love and knowledge of the genre, who just didn't know how to do it.
It's a man who has a very intrinsic knowledge of movies, yes, but no formal training, and also not that good at names.
Correct. So RZA,
it reminds me of me and Brandon. We were playing a Star Wars role playing game,
mm-hmm,
and Mel decided that she spent some resources so that she could have been a filmmaker at one point. She's a spy as part of her cover. And we got into an argument about which skill to use for it. Because she was like, it's intellect, right? And we both just laughed. We were laughing. And she's like, why are you laughing? We're like, it's presence or cunning. And she's like, I want to use cunning. It's like, you just said you have a spiritual advisor. That's a presence base. It feels like a person who is just entirely charisma-based, making this movie with absolutely no cunning or intelligence. Like, no knowledge, no wits when it comes to making movie. Just, fuck, I like movies. And it happens.
So this movie more or less came to be from what little background knowledge I could glean. RZA produced the Kill Bill soundtrack. And that's how he met Eli Roth and Quentin Tarantino.
Mr. Tarantino, what do you think? How do you feel about a man named Mr. Knife?
And he had something of a script written, but then him and Eli Roth like really beefed out. Like,
so I just imagine pulling out like a fucking printer paper, like graphic novel that he's been drawing. He's like, this guy's Mr. Knife. And he's got a cool knife. And this guy's got his iron hands. They're going to call him Iron Hand because he has iron hands. He uses Buddhism.
He uses chi to control his hands. I also, this week...
No hesitation, no struggle. Normally, in any of it, like, what, fucking half of the Doctor Strange movies about learning to use his hands again. This guy's like, oh, my hands are cut off. Don't worry, I know Buddhism. My hands work. I have a little trouble with chopsticks. That's my character flaw.
Yeah, two things. One, in real life, RZA is trained by a Shaolin monk.
No, oh, yeah, I get that sense.
So like he is trained in Buddhism.
I assume all members of the Wu-Tang Clan are Shaolin monks, honestly.
On some level, I assume so. And two, I have never seen the sequel until this past week.
Is a sequel?
It came out a couple years later. It's co-written by RZA and still starring RZA, but he didn't direct it. And so like what the movie gains in technical directing ability, it loses in like sheer will. It's not bad. It's just a little boring.
It's just like, this is a movie that I could not imagine getting a sequel. Not because it's bad, but because like no one would finance a sequel. Did it make its money back? Did it do well?
It was only a $15 million movie.
I remember seeing the ads for it and being like, that looks fun.
Let me look that up real quick. It, I mean, it made 21 off 15. So like barely, but yes.
This is a movie that like people are going to see, like listening to Minutes to Midnight, drinking like Proto Monster.
I saw it on DVR in like 2013, 2014.
It's weird because it feels like a 2009 movie to me.
Sure.
Like not necessarily in like production value, but it feels like that era.
So apparently production of this was very rushed. You can feel it.
Yeah.
But very rushed, and like half the scenes are one take wonders.
That's incredible.
He had maybe two takes, but half the scenes were done in like one take. And you can feel it. There are some character choices that I'm like, take five would have been better.
Which character choices?
A lot of Russell Brand in the beginning. He got better. He learned how to play the character as the movie went on. But a lot of him in the beginning, I was just like, okay, you pull it back. Pull up, like, you're playing Looney Tunes and this is like Kung Fu cartoon.
I think originally the character he's like, all right, your name's Mr. Knife, first name Jack.
Yes.
You're gonna fuck some prostitutes. About week five of filming, you're an emissary for the Emperor.
Yes. I think in the beginning, he's like 2 degrees off. I don't think he's bad.
I think it's because each scene was filmed in sequence.
I almost certainly.
Because you get to the point where they're like, that's the emissary for the Emperor. Like they mentioned the emissary for the Emperor, and he starts playing a different character.
Yes.
Because also, that's when the director says, oh, by the way, you're the emissary for the Emperor. I forgot to tell you that.
The opening scene is fantastic. And then there's like 20 minutes where RZA forgets what depth of field is. And it's all flat image. And then the last like 60 minutes is he's like, oh shit, I remember. I can like not make a I can like layer the image. It like makes it look better. I can tell the exact moment is when the Gemini couple come in.
Yeah.
There's like 15, 20 minutes where I'm watching this and I'm like, this is flat. Like everything is too evenly lit. It looks like it's all one surface.
There's these two guys and they got these swords that go together and they're yin yang. So they're like the yin yang twins. No, they're Gemini. Okay, so the Gemini twins? No, they're married. But I thought Gemini were like twins. Nah, nah. So like, how do you want them to die? Like, I want them to look like a yin yang symbol.
Also,
are you sure they're not the yin yang twins? No.
Also, their swords form yin yang symbols in a move that I think is very Matthew core is using your wife.
I was about to bring up using. Also, he uses
literally
it.
In my notes. You can. I'll show you.
His wife is. You're gonna treat this person. So she's your wife. You're gonna treat her like the stock of a gun.
Oh my gosh. Let me look. But yes. Die hold motherfuckers wielding his wife like a weapon feels very Matthew core. Literally wrote it down.
Yeah.
Also, Dave Bautista's in this movie.
I know, that was wild.
I love this.
He can turn himself into metal. It's never explained.
No, he just has the magic powers. And speaking of, like, not knowing how, like, camera works, the scene when Silver Lion and Dave Bautista meet, it's all handheld for no reason. It's everything up to that point is like steady, and then it's like, ooh, let's do a handheld scene, and then immediately followed by steady.
I'm a big fan of the one take wonder of all the prostitutes fucking.
Yes,
that's 100% someone saying you're fucking her, because and it just it looks like what a kid thinks fucking looks like. Like, what sticks out, what really sticks out to me is the one where he's on his back and she's laying on him and he's going. Yes. It's like, why are you going that fast? And there's not like a building up energy to it.
No.
It doesn't feel like it's building up.
No.
Or like they've reached a certain level of passion. That's just the speed of which he is fucking crap. It's like, what's happening?
When I almost said Russell Brand. When Russell Crowe, like, pulls out of the water and he has, like, beads, like, borderline rosary beads in his mouth. And I'm like, did you just pull rosary beads out of this woman?
We've all been there. We've all been there. We've all done that.
Yeah. That's not weird.
Again, it's going to be another situation where I look at, maybe it's unrealistic, but I look at this and I'm like, I could survive that. Not what? The rosary beads being pulled out of my ass. The, when she's being thrown around, right?
Yes.
Not dead. The one that, I'm like, I mean, I'd be fucked up.
I think it's because, the Tiger Lily or Silver Lily or...
Silk Lily?
Lady Silk. I mean, yes, I agree with you, but I think it's because she was thrown so many times that even the one that did her was just like,
she's just, ugh.
It was a residual.
She dies, so like, it doesn't look like any like wound or anything. She just goes, well, my health points are gone.
It dies.
I'm out of health points.
She just sees her fiance just like, Thaddeus, ugh.
It's like an Elder Scrolls NPC die where you just hit them and suddenly they just go, ooh, and they just like fall over.
There's this shot right when Russell Crowe enters right when he kills the fat guy.
Fat haw, a wart, hip, yeah. The hippo.
Yeah, right when he kills
this
hippo.
This is big guy. His name's the hippo. What does he do? He dies to Mr. Knife.
And he has the knife, and it's like a saw blade
chainsaw gun knife.
Yes.
And his name's Jack Knife. You might think, oh, Jack the Ripper? No, that would be too much character depth. This is just a man whose name is Jack Knife. You can call him Mr. Knife. And he's suddenly the emissary to the Emperor.
And right when he kills the dude, as he's making his announcement, the camera just like 360s around him. Like two or three times. And I'm just there like, why? This is a cool... This only exists because you think it's a cool shot.
I truly wish that this was like what all bad movies were like.
Me too.
Because it's not a good movie.
No.
It's so weirdly made. But like, there's enough people on set that know what they're doing that it's like, it has some professional veneer on it.
But also, I think it's like, it exudes charm.
I can't imagine what the 4-hour act like cut looks like. Like, who do we lose? Do we lose characters?
I don't know. I don't know. It's not available.
I'm Fire Feet.
Also,
my feet are on fire.
Also, at the end when Jet Li's like, I lost a father but gained a brother, that's a moment where I'm like, that makes way more sense than the 4-hour cut. Because in the movie, you had like two scenes together.
You barely yes. are cognizant of him for like most of the movie.
Yes. Yes, you like raised him back to health, but that was mostly your prostitute fiance. Like, you were there, kind of.
Also, just because you're friends, you just can't call a black guy brother, you know? It's... I like the little scene where he gets his freedom.
Yes.
I like that it's like, oh, yeah. So we're in like the middle of, so we're like, we're in the rising climax. We're approaching the climax. We're rising action right now. Hang on. It's time for a flashback.
Also, his mom is played by Pam Grier.
It just, that was.
His mom is played by Pam motherfucking Grier.
That scene came out of nowhere. It's like rising action. Da, 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 da. Hang on. We got to do a little. I got to explain how I got to China.
He realized in the editing room that he lost his arms and gained his arms in the next scene. He's like, oh shit, I need 10 minutes in between. So let me have an 8-minute flashback. By the way, I timed it. He doesn't have arms for 12 minutes of this movie.
How many of those minutes is he on screen for?
Are we counting flashback?
No.
Maybe three. probably, yeah, like four. Probably.
He's like, it's time to tell you my backstory. Like, oh, this is probably going to be pretty wild because everyone's pretty insane. I was a slave who escaped and then got shipwrecked and landed up in China and became a Buddhist monk.
So
and that's it.
Yes.
And like, I do like the guys like, I mean, that's 100% how slaves were probably freed. I don't know. I'm not a historian. Or it's like, what's, we're naming him now. Okay. You're going to choose the first two, but I choose the last name. There you go. Time to die.
So in the sequel,
he didn't have a name before then. That scene really felt like they were coming up with a name on the spot.
Oh, maybe.
Because he's like, what's his name? And she looked at him with such importance.
Yeah.
And she's like, Thaddeus. Like, she's naming him there.
I think that's just Pam Grier giving her all to this movie.
Like, I'm pretty sure you just said my slaves are free and then they're free. So a lot of what was done was like, when I'm dead, my slaves are free.
So in Man with the Iron Fists, he is a slave. He goes to be a Shaolin. He trains amongst the Shaolin monks and then gets shipwrecked.
After he gets shipwrecked, then trains.
Yes,
because he escapes from America aboard the Destiny.
Yes, in
so
Man
you can get that shot of Destiny and zoom out. It's like that's his destiny.
So subtle. In Man with the Iron Fist 2, the opening is him not wanting to use his fists as weapons anymore, and he needs to go back to train with the monks. And so he boards another boat and gets shipwrecked again.
Where does he end up?
In just in this village run by not hyena, a different clan. And it's like a mining village.
They should have sent him to Japan.
And
I want to see him punch a katana.
In the sequel, he forges magic. Actually, this it more explains the chi. He forges magic legs for this dude in a wheelchair. Turns out the dude was bad news, but not the point.
I thought you were about to say he somehow lost his legs.
No,
well.
A different person loses their legs, and he forges magic legs. And you watch the other person try to learn to walk with the magic legs. So they do kind of explain, like...
Are the legs made? I thought that they were just normal iron hands, but he used magic to make them move.
They're manipulated through chi.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I guess both.
Because they're like, you can use chi to make inanimate objects move.
Yes. But... In the sequel,
I'm gonna use my chi to make my life size Gardevoir statue move.
But in the sequel, the dude learning to walk again doesn't have like strong enough focus chi. We later learn because he's a bad guy. However, that's just the sequel kind of explains that part better, where it's just because RZA is just him. RZA is just him.
He's the Man with the Iron Fist.
He is the Man with the Iron Fist, so that's how he can use it immediately. It's just that's why there's no struggle. Is just all of his training and focus led into that moment. He didn't need to train because he spent his whole life training. You don't gotta get ready if you stay ready.
I mean, every time I see anyone in a wheelchair, I'm gonna be like, why don't you just learn chi? You should focus more.
Yeah?
The reason you can't walk is because you aren't focusing hard enough to make magic legs work.
I need to be around you next time this happens.
Oh, you have a learning disability? Why don't you just use your fucking chi?
Just use your chi. Make your brain better. So RZA produces the Kill Bill soundtrack. All Tarantino also had like nothing to do with this movie. He just presented it just because he was friends with RZA and Eli Roth and was just like, I love you guys. And like, this movie rules. So I'll put my name on it, but I'm going to have like no involvement in the making of this movie.
Makes sense. You know, he's better at names.
Yeah, I mean, you're not wrong.
What really keyed me into how this movie was produced was when he's down, he's going to find Dagger. And there's some gears in the background turning. And I'm like, why are those gears there? What do those gears do? Those gears are 100% only there because someone's going to die in them. That's the only reason why there's turning gears there. They're beneath the whorehouse. Why are there gears? What are they doing?
I think it's like a trap, but I can't tell
you. What do you mean it's a trap?
Because they set up that the basement of the whorehouse is filled with traps.
I'm going to tell you what they're there. It's because in this scene, Dagger's going to die being crushed by gears.
Listen, I'm trying to make sense of this movie.
I just like, that's 100. Like, oh, so he's going to die in those. Because why else would they be there? There's no other gears in the room.
Russell Crowe in this movie is playing the exact opposite of his character in
A Beautiful Mind.
I was gonna say The Quick and the Dead. But I guess he is opposite Beautiful Mind also, but The Quick and the Dead, where
took a lot of this character for The Mummy.
Yeah,
I'm looking at this, I'm like, I see your Mr. Hyde in here. My favorite on-screen Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, because they don't change the appearance too much.
Sure.
Which I know it changes a bit more in the book, but I really like that. I think it really works better when, like, there's like a super noticeable change.
Yeah, I don't know why this is making me think of this. We're going to tangent for half a second. Have you heard of Danny Boyle's Frankenstein at, like, West End?
No.
So it was Johnny Lee Miller and Benedict Cumberbatch, by the way, both people who have played Sherlock Holmes.
Oh, the play?
Yeah.
I'm not sure. I don't know much about it, but I'm aware of the play. Yeah.
So Danny Boyle directed it, and the two main are Johnny Lee Miller and Benedict Cumberbatch, who play both the doctor and the monster, and they alternate nights who plays what character. So both characters have to know each other's part so well, so that there's like there is a bond between the two that just comes from naturally like having to know both parts.
That's
so
cool.
Well,
I like that.
And that like when like Benedict Cumberbatch is the monster, he's a little bit playing the doctor, and when he's the doctor, he's a little bit playing the monster.
That's cool.
It's a great idea,
man. We were robbed of a bunch of hot monster ladies. We had like hot monster mummy,
yeah,
and we're gonna have like a whole cinematic universe that I imagine of more hot monsters and Tom Cruise.
Just wait until Bride of Frankenstein gets remade eventually.
I mean, they were, though. That's all they were. They're creating an Avengers out of Universal monsters. You have the Mummy. They're gonna do Invisible Man.
They did do Invisible Man.
They didn't do the one there. No, because Johnny Depp was going to be the Invisible Man.
Oh, but yeah, Lee Whannell wrote and directed the Invisible Man.
The good one.
Yeah, and Wolfman last year.
Yeah, not the Darkverse version.
Oh, I thought that was the Dark Universe version.
With the suit?
With the woman in the mental hospital?
No, that's not Dark Universe at all, no.
Oh, I thought that was just like the first one in the Dark Universe.
No,
okay.
No. That was actually a really cool, interesting take on the concept.
I agree. No, 100%.
That was actually a really good movie. This was going to have Johnny Depp as the classical Invisible Man.
Oh, okay.
Well. Like how we had classical Mummy, but hot. Damn, when is a mummy going to try to make me her immortal king husband?
So, obviously, you have fallen in love with most of the women in this movie.
Yeah. Really only after they become the murderous Black Widow.
I knew that immediately.
I was like, watching this movie, I'm like, man, I'm not really falling in love with anyone in this movie. That's weird. But then they were all these like goth prostitutes. And I was like, okay.
You really are that simple, aren't you?
I'm a simple man. I like what I like.
Listen, I think I've been on record. I've definitely been on record. I don't know if I've kept this on record. I agree that it's incredibly hot when a woman could kill you and chooses not to. But like, that's not like a key deciding factor.
I respect power.
Me too.
Like, that's I don't know. That's really it.
That's fair.
The ability to kill a certain squareness of the shoulders.
Yeah.
Sturdy. I like a sturdy woman.
So who, I mean, there's only like two or three women here with like names and plot relevance.
That really is what kind of hampered my ability to fall in love, is that all the really hot, all the really women like, oh, wow, oh, she could fix me. They're just nameless black widows. I don't think there's a name. There's like two named women in this movie.
Yeah, Lady Silk and Lucy Liu.
And Lucy Liu.
I forget her character name off the... It might be Black Widow, to be absolutely honest.
It could be.
It's like Lady Willow, Widow or something, or some shit.
I live in this small jungle village where a good 25% of the footprint is a whorehouse.
Yeah, at least what we see.
A considerable voting block of, because it's a small village, a considerable voting block of this small village is prostitutes.
Yes.
The majority of people, like villagers we see in this village, right? You have a blacksmith, you have a bunch of prostitutes, and then a bunch of children.
Yeah.
Those are the main groups if you put all those together, you see maybe a bit less... like than that of other people in this village.
If the 4-hour version of this movie has the pacing of the 90-minute version of this movie, I don't want to see the 4-hour version of this
movie.
That
would be nuts.
The second half of this movie moves so much faster than the first half of this movie. I am very interested to see like what it was more fleshed out in the 4-hour cut of this movie.
When is the Iron Hands?
I did not get the chance to watch the director's cut. If I get the chance this week, I will add an addendum, not editing Harrison, but to next week's episode. I will like in the very beginning be like, by the way, this makes so much more sense.
Is like when I mean, we're focusing a lot on everyone else but the man with the iron hands.
So the director's cut of this movie is 15 minutes longer, and then there's an extra 20-ish minutes of deleted scenes that, like, I'm guessing you can like figure out where they go.
I added 15 minutes to the flashback.
Oh my god, I hope not. But so in existence, about 2 hours of this movie, give or take, exists. Hopefully this week I have time and I can like see a more fleshed out version of this, because there are Lucy Liu's pep talk to the prostitutes about power being taken. First of all, great scene, great performance. Shocked if that was a one take, because that's actually a very good one take. But there's so much weight behind that moment that I'm like, I'm sure in the 4-hour cut of this movie there's like more context, where in the 90-minute cut there's just enough context for it to like make sense.
It feels like every person, it's like Trouble in Little China, but everyone in this movie's Jack Horner.
Jack Burton, yeah.
Jack Burton.
Yeah. So we have it, okay.
Or rather, there is no Jack, and we're just watching this movie. We're just watching a bunch where everyone else knows the context, and we have no context. Everyone else is like, I fully understand the world I'm in. I'm like, what is happening? What's going? Why does that guy turn to bronze?
So it's Big Trouble where the viewer is Jack Burton.
Like, why does he turn to bronze?
Also, why he killed his entire clan? That's one line.
That's a throwaway.
It's such a
tiger style. I thought they were extinct.
They are extinct.
I killed them all.
I killed.
Why? What was your backstory? I know nothing about. You killed a snake charmer guy. That's the only backstory you're given. Is you killed a man called Snake Charmer.
So, how many people were your old clan? Why did you kill them? Is the bronze a curse, or did you like sell your soul to get the bronze and then kill them? Or are they just completely disconnected and you're just happen to be a great fighter and have magic metal bronze powers?
No lead up to there being a tiger clan either.
No, absolutely not.
Also, like how the flashback seems like, how did you become such a great blacksmith? That's what led into the flashback is,
yeah.
How did he become such a great blacksmith? Most of the backstory is him being freed from slavery, him being shipwrecked in Buddhism. There is like one line that alludes to him being a blacksmith, and how did you become a blacksmith is the setup for the scene. The one line is, do you have the horseshoes ready? So like, how did I become the greatest blacksmith? Well, I made horseshoes.
Wolf Clan also exists in Jungle Village. One scene, we don't know if he made those weapons. Like, we know he made the Lion Clan weapons because we see the blueprints.
Ask for the weapons.
Yes.
And then we see Wolf Clan die.
Yeah.
And that's it.
But we don't know the timeline.
We don't.
So, was it before the 2 days and they didn't have the weapon?
I wasn't entirely sure he finished the knife suit in time, but apparently he did. It looked like it was interrupted, but apparently no, he's done.
This movie either needed to be 2.5 hours or 80 minutes.
What would they cut?
That's the thing.
The flashback?
I don't know if you can, but if, gun to your head, you had to get an 80-minute cut of this movie, most of it is going in the first 30 minutes.
You'd fuck a lot of Russell Crowe fucking women there.
You can cut almost
we
all.
We did not need this scene of let's pretend to be Catholic. That's not plot necessary at all.
And then there's like a flirtation between Lucy Liu and just she grabs his crotch and is like,
and she's like, does that hurt? He's like, it feels good.
He's like, I'm on opium right now. This is amazing.
Yeah, grab my dick. Man was in beautiful mind.
He's like,
he's a gladiator.
This kind of shows.
And there's just a scene where he's having his dick grabbed really hard by Lucy Liu. And he goes, yeah, feels good, don't it?
Russell Crowe in this movie kind of proves how important a director is.
Yeah. Like... or how important it is that the director be good. Because he's doing world-class act. I guarantee you, this is a world-class performance if you saw the directing notes. He's following those directing notes to the T. He understands the character as it is being presented to him to a T. He's explaining and doing fun things with the character as much as he understands the character as it's been given to him to a T. This man was not given much to work with.
I don't even know. I mean, probably. His name is Jack Knife.
Your name is Jack Knife. But you have a cool knife. You like to fuck Chinese prostitutes. Also, you've been to India. Because the one scene that I know he's playing around with the character is he's like, and just a touch of butter. Just a touch of butter. Because that fits the character. And yes, I know that wasn't in the repeating it, not in the script.
This movie's like a 6 out of 10. On a technical level, this movie's... If I were just judging on sense-making, remove the charm.
Yeah.
If I, like, couldn't...
Remove the fun.
Remove the fun, this movie's... I'm going to be generous and say 3.5, but remove the charm of this movie. But this movie, it oozes charisma.
It's the only way it works.
The question I wanted to answer, another reason I brought this movie on the podcast, is our movies tend to fall into one of two categories. Reaction to the previous movie or movies that we saw as children and wondering if they hold up. This is kind of both. Like, this is a reaction to Mortal Kombat and Big Trouble, but Mortal Kombat and Big Trouble. And I want to know, as someone who didn't watch this as a child, does this movie hold up?
Yeah, it's fun. Like, if I walked away from a movie, I'd be like, that was stupid as shit, but I would recommend it.
Yeah.
If you just want to see fucking crazy superhero kung fu and have a good time, this would be great to watch in theaters.
I wish I saw this movie in theaters.
Again, it's like, it's a bad movie, but you don't feel bad watching it.
No. I don't know if it's bad as much as it's amateur. What are you defining as bad? Like, on a technical or like how are you defining bad?
Like, on a technical, on a script writing, on a understanding of how stories progress. There's a lot of things where it's not good. It is the charm that wins the day because, like, story progression, shit. Production value, a nice polish, but varies constantly and has really weird choices. Characterization, pretty bad. There's, like, no characterization to most of these guys. They are all just kind of, like, flat, two-dimensional beings.
Yeah.
Like every individual element on its own sucks, but the charm makes it a delicious soup for me to write up. somehow. I don't know how this movie's as good as it is. It shouldn't be. No. Everything about this movie screams that it should be awful in like not a fun way.
I think it's because there's something about the idea of this man being so in love with this genre and knowing this genre inside and out and paying like as much love to the genre as he possibly can. I think if you could fix the pacing issues of the first half, a two to two and a half hour version of this movie, you give not even room to breathe. Don't give this story room to breathe because he doesn't know how to pace. Give the characters room to like chew the fat a little bit. Like,
yeah, because like most, like a good two thirds of this movie is just things happening as the blacksmith monologues over it. Like, a bunch of wild shit happens. It's vaguely connected. He goes, things were shit in Jungle Village, but I was going to get out.
I was paying my prostitute fiance, and she was hiding the money from her pimp boss, played by Lucy Liu, who I think the fact that, the reason Lucy Liu is so good in this movie, I genuinely think that's a great performance.
Yeah.
Is because she was in Kill Bill. So she kind of, knew the, like, she's playing at least some version of her Kill Bill character, or she's not playing her Kill Bill character, but she's playing off the energy that she had done at this point 7 years prior. Yeah.
Movie's fucking wild.
This movie, so
I'm not sure this movie should exist.
I think this movie should
like
exist
conceptually. I'm not like an impossible shape.
Sure.
Like, this movie is an impossible movie. Because it is so bad, but it's, like, enjoyable.
Mm-hmm.
In, like, such an actually authentic way. Not even, like, an ironic, mocking way. It is authentically enjoyable, despite being arguably a piece of shit.
This movie was not shot for slow-mo. And he uses slow-mo randomly so many times. And it looks genuinely awful. And it's so fun.
Like,
I think that's the best metaphor for this movie.
They never explain why all these children are helping them. There's all these, like, they have, like, this child army that's helping them out. It's never explained. You just suddenly see a child start telling information. You go, okay.
Again, 2.5 hours. Explain those types of things. Explain the small shit. Explain how the clans work.
Did Jack Knife, like, kill the dastardly king of children and become their new ruler? Like, what's happening here?
This movie is such a fascinating artifact. It's so difficult to talk about without just explaining the same things over and over and over again. Because would I recommend this movie basically to everyone? I have recommended this movie. I haven't seen this movie in like a decade, and I'm so happy it held up. My 15-year-old brain thought this movie was cooler than it was because I was able to like...
Is a movie made for a 15-year-old?
Exactly. But and like as an adult, now I can analyze the movie and be like, this is so messy. But like... This movie is good. It's charming. It's amateurish. It's made by a borderline incompetent filmmaker, and
that's how I would best describe this entire movie, is borderline incompetent.
And it's good, and I recommend it.
Somehow it's good despite being borderline incompetent.
We've barely hit an hour, and I feel like
that is much longer than anyone has ever talked about this movie before. There is I can't imagine we could ever like talk for about it as long as the movie is. Like, we could never match the time. Like, I mean, most of this movie again is like bad slow-mo fight scenes and Russell Crowe fucking prostitutes. That's the majority of this film.
And that, well, the first half has a lot of Lion Clan internal politics. Also, we didn't even mention the weird, like, internal politics that Lion Clan has with the brothel. Like, why they're there to begin with.
I don't know.
There's, like, Silver Lion and Jet Yi are brothers, but not by blood. Like, Silver Lion was raised by Gold Lion, but Jet Yi just is Gold Lion's bio, son. He just is the prince.
I'm not even sure what the Gold Lions are.
There's the Lion Clan. Gold Lion was like the leader. Yeah.
So are they all criminals? Are they not?
I think they're like competing clan. I think everyone is competing with other clans for control of China.
That's 100% what it says in the script. There's a bunch of clans. Wolf Clan, Tiger Clan, Lion Clan. They're competing for control of China. That's it. That's the world building. That's all there is. There's nothing more to it. That's all there fucking is.
And yet, somehow this movie's good. Do you have any final thoughts? I'm so happy that I recommended this movie. I'm so happy I got to watch it again.
This movie broke me because it's good. And it shouldn't be good.
I'm so happy that you like this movie. Because here's the thing. I'll say
it rips. But it shouldn't.
This movie rips. I thought we were gonna argue because this movie is incoherent. It is
borderline incompetent, incoherent. It's a fucking mess. It feels like as they filmed a scene, he was writing the next one.
See, I know that's not true.
I know it's not true.
But it feels like
it. But that's what it feels like, doesn't it?
100%. I like this.
Does not feel like a movie that was planned. It feels like he wrote it in one go. He just didn't look back ever.
They spent like 18 months.
That's insane. That's insane.
Which only leads me to believe that the 4-hour cut of this movie is coherent. That it's too long and it's probably just as like amateurishly made, but it's probably so much more coherent. But at the same time, no one is gonna sit down and watch a 4-hour kung fu movie made by a first-time director, who by the way is RZA from the Wu-Tang Clan. I like this movie a lot. Listen, I only gave it 3 stars on Letterboxd because I can't make myself give it more. If Dune Part 1 I gave 3.5 stars, I can't give Man with the
nuts.
Iron Fist.
That is so nuts. It is so nuts. However, that those two movies are anywhere close to each other in the Letterboxd.
Dune Part 1's a 3.5, and Man with the Iron Fist
is a 3. That's stupid. You're fucking stupid. That's insane and stupid.
Do you want to do socials?
That is a borderline incompetent fucking rating. Giving the difference between those two movies is not 0.5 star. You need to raise or lower one of them.
No, they're both staying. My level of enjoyment was so close. Here's the thing: if I were a less honest man, I would rank Man with Iron Fist higher than Dune Part 1.
No one would ever listen to you. You'd be forced to wear a dunce hat and wander the town square.
I gave Man with the Iron Fist 2 2.5 stars.
I think if you like look at someone and you say, like, Man, the Iron Fist is a better movie than Dune Part 1. Like, they are legally allowed to shoot you dead on the spot.
I don't think that. I do think that they should take away my film degree.
They should. If anyone in Kent State, it's gonna take it away. Like, 0.5 star difference, they're bumping you down to an associate's. They're like, this man does not possess a bachelor's understanding of film.
Sometimes you watch movies with joy. You don't watch them to analyze them because they fall apart when you analyze them.
I wasn't analyzing it. It was falling apart. I was sitting there enjoying it solely as a mess, and I still had to pause it to be like, those gears are only there for someone to die in.
I can't.
It's like
rate
if there's a
higher.
Scene at a bar. There's a big lava pit in the middle. You're like, I wonder what that's there for.
There was a not small part of me that wanted to be a contrarian and rate it like 4.5 stars. I can't. I am too honest of a man. Oh, I can't. Man. I can't do it. But there was a part of me that wanted to be like, this movie rules. Fuck you. But there's 0.5 star difference.
My obvious murder years.
Do you want to do socials?
Yeah. Jesus. You can find me on Instagram. If you wanna, I don't know. You wanna send me like kung fu move? I don't know, man. If you wanna, I don't know. Midwest_magician.
The Cora X reader fanfic.
The Cora X reader fanfic is still out there. You wanna send me some hot female mummy fanfiction? I'll take that too. You can find the show at Two Men Movie Podcast, and you can email us at twomenmoviepodcast@gmail.com.
The YouTube is Two Men and a Movie.
Yeah.
You can find me on Instagram, TikTok, Threads, and Lemonade as HarrisonPoole.com, HarrisonPooledcom. HarrisonPoole.com. Thank you so much to Tristan Hostetter for our theme music. Thank you guys for listening. Thank you, RZA, for making this movie. Thank you, Quentin Tarantino, for presenting this movie. Eli Roth for co-writing this movie.
Thank you. Kisses.
This is Matthew and Harrison's Two Men in a Movie. It's not what it sounds like.